as we've accomplished in the
Blog Talk Radio.
The contrast in style, tone, and effectiveness between President Biden and President Trump is important, too.
Schumer claims the president is restoring effective, truthful, and responsive government. A judge in North Carolina is hearing arguments on whether or not to release video of a deadly police shooting in Elizabeth City. The judge could make a decision today after protesters demanded seeing all the body camera footage associated with the killing of Andrew Brown Jr. Joe Rogan says he thinks for the most part it's safe to get vaccinated, but the podcaster and UFC commentator says young people don't need to worry about getting the vaccine if they're healthy. White House medical advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci tells NBC's Today Show he disagrees.
You're propagating the outbreak because it is likely that you, even if you have no symptoms, that you may inadvertently and innocently then infect someone else who might infect someone who really could have a problem with a severe outcome.
The CDC says all Americans age 16 and older should get vaccinated. A tornado watch is in effect. Parts of Missouri, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and Texas could see severe weather today. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
Local Soup Bingo is having a Mystic Marathon on Saturday, May 8th, starting at 6:40 p.m. There will be 30 regular games, each paying $750, for a total of over $22,500 in winnings. Local Soup Bingo in Auburn, your home for Machingo.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies today and a few sun breaks. High temperatures around 64, 65 degrees tonight. Clouds will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down about 49-50. For Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a few sun breaks yet again. High temperatures around 71-72. We will, however, though, see a chance of light showers moving in Thursday night to Friday. Low temperatures down to about 50. Clouds and rain expected for Friday. Highs around 61.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.
I'm Martha Childress with the Natural Choice Network. Join us every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite leaders from our sustainable community to share their unique visions and valuable insights. You'll learn great tools to make your life greener, healthier, and more sustainable for generations to come. Thank you for making the natural choice. That's the Natural Choice Network every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Please join us.
Alternative Talk 1150. We're on your radio at 1150 a.m. We're on your HD radio at 98.9 Channel 3.
How many ways to listen?
We're on the web at 1150kknw.com. Streaming live audio and video as well as MP3 archives of many of our shows.
So many ways to listen.
And now, we're on your smartphone or tablet. Download our free app in the Apple App Store or Google Play and take Alternative Talk 1150 anywhere you go.
So many ways to listen.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next to you.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tuning us in and turning us on. This is the Dr. Pat Show, and by now many of you have noticed that we have changed up our opening music, and more to come on that. Wow, we've got a great show for all of you today. You know, I want to talk about something. Benny, did you ever see the movie Minority Report?
I remember
seeing that with Tom Cruise.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That movie did more for the word precognition or precognitive or precog than I think any book that ever had been written on psychology or anything else.
Yeah, it seemed like it was like every fourth word they used.
Every fourth word. It was like, I don't even know the name of the characters that were in it. It was just precog, right? But What it did, though, was it implanted, made us more aware of what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also, you know, what happens with that is it makes us also aware. It makes us aware if we are walking and sleeping and dreaming and we have, let me call it, a vision. Is that vision a vision of our past? Is it the present? Is it the future? What is it? What is it? Fascination with dreams and dreamers and our fascination with waking up like I did the other day and say, OMG, I haven't had a dream about my stepmom who passed away. I hadn't had a dream about her like in 20 years. Like a real, like, wake-me-up dream about it. And lo and behold, we get to have a conversation with Eric Wargo, joining me here today. His book, Precognitive Dream Work and the Long Self. How do we interpret the messages from our future? It's a fascinating book, but more than a book, you know, Eric's work is fascinating. And so outside of the realm of Hollywood and pop culture, what is it that fascinates us with dream work, but even more so fascinates us with the predictive so-called nature of it? Eric, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dr. Pat. Thank you for having me.
I do believe we have a fascination. I do believe
Absolutely.
That, and I'm talking about us as a society. Now, other cultures, they live and breathe by dream work.
Right.
What is it for you, though? What I want to know is about your journey, right? About mm-hmm. who influenced you in this, and what was it in your life that tapped you on the shoulder, or maybe a 2x4, that said, wow, I think there's something to what just happened to me.
Right. The story of how I got interested in this is kind of a roundabout one. To a paper that was published exactly a decade ago by a very well-known psychologist at Cornell University named Daryl Bem. And this paper was not about dreams, but it was about the idea that people can feel their future, or what's called presentiment, and it's a version of precognition. He had put large numbers of undergraduates in these experiments where he sort of reversed the order of stimulus and response in a bunch of basic psychology type experiments, and discovered that he got statistically significant findings that these participants were pre-responding to stimuli that they would encounter in the experiment later. And this was a mind-blowing finding, but for the field of psychology, it made so many people angry. There's such hostility in the field of psychology toward anything to do with ESP.
I know.
And we can get into the reasons for that. But and I happened at that time to be working as an editor at a psychology organization. It wasn't the organization that was publishing this paper. But I saw firsthand this hostility toward the topic of ESP. And it's not something that... It was something that I had been starting to think about anyway. I was kind of getting interested in the paranormal at that point in my life. And I had had a sort of knee-jerk skepticism toward ESP that I think a lot of people who grow up, I grew up in a scientific household. My parents were psychologists. I was trained as a scientist, and I sort of had a, you know, I assumed that the skeptics, you know, we're right that this is, you know, ESP stands for error someplace.
Yes.
You know, it's somehow the product of faulty science, wishful thinking, superstition, and so on and so on. But this paper was, like, genuinely intriguing because it passed peer review, the experimental methods were sound, it was a large sample of people, it wasn't just two or three people. And seeing the hostility that it invited from scientists, people who are supposed to be inquiring into human nature, but in this case had a closed-off attitude toward a really interesting finding. That kind of sparked me. When I see an underdog, you know, I tend to want to, you know, run to their rescue, and it seems like bullying a little bit. And so it prompted me to do my due diligence and read up about the topic. And I really delved into the research on precognition after that point. But the funny thing is, when you say, you know, what things in my own life, well, you know, reading about precognition, reading about precognitive dreams, I realized, oh, I've had those, you know? And, you know, I had one on the morning of 9/11 that I put in the book. I've had others and other kinds of precognitive experiences, not just dreams. And fortunately, I had for a couple decades at that point, I kept a detailed dream journal. So I was really able to confirm some of these things. So that led me to this topic, and I became sort of obsessed with it. And the more you pay attention to the possibility that your dreams are precognitive, the more you notice it happening. And gradually, the natural doubt that kind of creeps in when people have a paranormal experience of some or whatever kind, gradually those again and again and again precognitive dreams just kind of wore down my doubt, and so that's what led me to it. And then I published a book a couple of years ago about on the topic, more in a theoretical and historical framework. But people just reached out to me after that with emails about their precognitive dreams. I realized, okay, there needs to be a book, a guide to this topic, and to sort of debunk some of the myths around it, and so on.
I want to ask you this question because we're going to really dig deeper into this and into the book, because your book is really quite in-depth and also explains, you know, what most people experience, but also, you know, what the realm of psychology may suggest. I mean, it really is beautifully done. And yet at the same time, how many people do you know, or did I know, or how many people listening, you know, to the show wake up one day and they have an experience? They, just like you mentioned, you know, you had that experience, a precognition, a 9/11 precognition. How many of us wake up with those hits, let's call them, and just kind of blow them off? Like, I can't really be seeing that until after the event. And I want to talk to you about what happens sometimes when, you know, we do have these visions. People don't know what to do, right? It's am I crazy? What does it mean? And that's what today's show is about, Eric. That's what I want to talk with you about, is how do we interpret these? And I said this before when I was introducing you in the book. I had a dream about my stepmom about two or three nights ago, and I had not dreamt about my stepmom since her passing. And boy, wouldn't it have been great to sort of have you on the other end of the phone to say, what is this about? We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to take a look at how precognition shows up in our lives, aimed as prophesizing. Is it the same as a premonition? Is it the same as a psychic, intuitive knowing? And what is it that these messages are trying to tell us or even help us with? All of that is here. All of that is in the book. And we are also taking your questions. If you have comments, if you want to talk to Eric today, 1-800-930-2819. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, life coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you nailed it. For more information about me, visit CarrieNail.com.
Imagine starting your week off with a teaching, a clearing, and an activation direct from the God consciousness. If you would like to feel more in charge of your week ahead, then I personally invite you to join me, Tracy L. Clark, for our monthly Soul Sunday non-denominational service at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, online or in person. All donations for this event go to the TLC Initiative Fund to help those in need. Sign up now at TracyLClark.com and let's connect together in the glory realm.
Welcome to Soul Activation Podcast, a world-class broadcast of insight and inspiration with the renowned healer and coach, Suzanne Alexandria. In this series, she dives deep into the magical sea of you, to the place in you that's ready to activate. Tune in live every second and fourth Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit TrishLaub.com. That's TrishLaub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show Heart Change Consciousness on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to get big and live your life out loud? Tune in to Get Big Out Loud Radio, exploring life through the lens of curiosity and compassion. With me, Carrie Knudsen, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will offer ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. If you want to get big and live your life out loud, visit me at KnudsenSpeaks.com.
Here I go again, I see the crystal vision. I keep my vision to myself. We're gonna be the one to wrap around your dreams.
Want to talk about dreaming? You want to talk about, like, the goddess of all time.
Absolutely.
Just saying that she is.
Couldn't agree more.
Oh, my goodness. She was from another planet. She is from another planet in another world, and she is endless. Benny, good job, right? Where'd you dig that up from?
Oh, man, you know, it's over on the top part of it, not the bottom part.
My goodness. Had a few dreams about her myself. Eric, thank you for joining me here today. Before we dig deeper into the book and the detail of the book, of course, I want folks to know how can they get a copy of Precognitive Dream Work and The Long Self, interpreting messages from your future, but also how can they find out about you and some of the things you're up to?
Sure. They can get the book from bookstores and from any online purveyor of books
that you wish
to patronize. And my blog is where they can learn more about the broader range of my interests and research in this larger area of consciousness and the paranormal and related areas. My blog is thenightshirt.com, all one word, as in the kind of garment one used to wear in olden times to bed.
That's right. Yeah, sometimes we still wear it. Sometimes we don't.
I used to have one, yeah. I didn't look very good in it. It's not a flattering look. It's not a flattering look for a man.
I don't know if any of us look good in the night shirt. I think I can think of one picture or image of somebody in a nightshirt. Who was that? Oh, Charlize Theron. Maybe in the night. That was the best picture of a nightshirt. I want to start in the book, not sort of at the beginning. I want to start with the conversation that you have in the book about the law in the cosmos, because I would like to start there. And the reason I want to start there is because when we think about the cosmos, when we think about law, when we think about universal principles, there are some things that we know and some things we don't know. And even those things we do know, we have a really hard time connecting the dots. And I think in the book, this is one of the places you connect the dots. It must have been important to you to include part four, most in the book, you know, for a lot of reasons. But is this a way to help people understand how to connect dots? I'd like to hear your perspective.
Yes, I think it is, but it's the most challenging part of this issue, and I'm sure you can agree, having read that. It's also, I think, the most necessary, because what you're referring to, part four of my book, which addresses premonitions, and the thorny question of fate and free will, and whether, you know, there's the perennial question, you know, okay, precognitive dreaming is real. Okay, I had a dream about, getting in a plane tomorrow and it crashes. You know, is that going to happen, or can I change that? And I think it's a myth that's been purveyed pretty much throughout the history of books on ESP and precognitive dreaming and dream work, is that, well, you know, even though we can see the future in our dreams, that doesn't mean the future is fixed. We can always change our fate. We can change our, you know, they just show us probabilities or whatever. And I think for a lot of reasons, and some of the reasons have to do with physics and physical law, I think that's a cop-out, really. that the, you know, physics says, since Einstein, physicists, cosmologists had kind of accepted that our sense of the future being open-ended and versus the past being fixed is kind of an illusion, that time is a dimension just like space, in which case the future really already exists and we're moving through it. We have this cognitive illusion that we're moving from one end to the other. But for a cosmologist, for most cosmologists, they have no trouble with the idea that, in fact, the future is already there. Now, what troubles people is, you know, the idea, well, I can see something terrible in my future. That means I can't change it, okay? And that's a perennial theme in classical myths like Oedipus or Macbeth or things like that. Well, the reality of precognitive dreams and precognition in general is not the way it's typically portrayed in art and literature. And, you know, you're not going to have a video quality dream about a disaster in your future that you could avoid, okay? Mm. That's one part of the answer to, you know, people who are concerned about this topic. The second part is, 9 times out of 10, you have a dream that seems to be about a disaster, and in fact, it turns out to be about something good. It was symbolic in some way,
right?
Or your dream kind of dramatized something relatively minor, some kind of minor mishap or upheaval in your life, and made it into a big thing. Or a very common pattern with premonitions of disaster and death and so forth is that we have a dream that, you know, you're in a car crash, and then you read about such a car crash tomorrow happening to someone else on the news, for instance.
Yeah.
So we have premonitions, but we don't know how they're going to come to pass. And while those stories, you know, alarming sounding stories of people, you know, having premonitions of their own death or the death of loved ones, those do happen, but they're so in so the minority of precognitive dreams. Most dreams are bringing us, they're really telling us in one way or another about rewards ahead, even if they're couched in kind of disaster language.
Yeah.
And that's part of the rules of symbolism that kind of govern how information from the future is able to reflux into the past and not cause some sort of paradox.
You know what, I want to ask you about this for a minute, because you said something, and I just don't want to jump ahead. So what happens, correct me if I'm wrong, what happens is we have an event like that, whether it's a dream, my stepmom, it doesn't matter, but we have that. I'm a big daydreamer. Some people say that's not dreaming. I literally stop for a moment, like this morning. I was sitting down with Linda right before the show, and I was attempting to eat breakfast, and I just stopped. And you could see the look in my face, like she's not here, right? Mm-hmm. And Linda said something like, what are you doing, right? And I didn't have an answer for her because I didn't think I was doing anything. But the thing you said that really I've really noticed about myself, the mind wants to kick in and tell me that that dream I had is a precognition of disaster.
Yeah.
Right? But your book is here to help us to say, wait a minute, hit the pause button if you don't mind. You know, before you let the mind take over and put you in an event, you know, like the news this morning projecting a giant tsunami in Tacoma, Washington, you know, before you drop yourself in that story, there's got to be a way. And isn't that what you're helping us with throughout this book?
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicted, confused emotions around precognitive dreams. You know, the people's first reaction to it is like, oh, cool. And then second, but wait a minute. And then a lot of people, you know, shy away from the topic because they're like afraid of somehow dreaming about something terrible that they can't change or whatever. And I think this is a perennial anxiety, and it's the anxiety that myths like Oedipus and so forth were pointing to, that they were really dealing with this problem. Because for the ancients, you know, they had no problem with the idea of, yeah, dreams sometimes do predict the future. Oracles sometimes do predict the future. People go into trances while awake and predict the future, you know.
Right.
So there's, you know, there's this idea that somehow go to sleep and have this horrible dream about something really terrible happening, and then it's going to happen that way. And that almost never happens. Like I said, those cases when people do have disaster premonitions, they all always transpire in an unexpected way to someone else, or, you know, or they're sort of symbolic, and the actual event is different. But you know, you can see the connection once the event happens, but it's not the way you dream it. And, you know, you shouldn't always trust the emotions in your dreams. Very often, dreams about future events, I've found in my own work and in other dream workers that I work with, that sometimes particularly long-distance, powerful precognitive dreams about events far ahead in your life, they often manifest as nightmares or as having a very dark feeling to them. And then when they transpire, no, it was something amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that there's some feature about the way information reaches us in the past that our, I don't know, our emotional circuitry doesn't interpret it correctly, or something about our cognition doesn't interpret it correctly. But there's another one of the other mental health consequences of precognitive dreaming. Having a dream that you didn't realize was a premonition, but then something bad happens, you know.
Right.
A loved one dies. And you realize, oh, my gosh, I dreamed about this. And if I dreamed about it, I should have been able to do something.
Exactly.
I should have done something. So
exactly.
People feel all this guilt. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And for exactly the same reasons that I was just discussing, you should never feel guilty about that.
Yeah.
Because had the event not happened, you would not have had the dream. There's a grandfather again, there's that grandfather paradox rule going on the idea of fate as something immutable really is a reassurance to people who have a lot of premonitions and so on, because it assures them that no, it's actually not my fault. You know, there's nothing I could have done to change that outcome, because the way I received the information was not intended to get a warning. It's not like I wasn't on the ball and I should have gotten this warning. People have this idea that somehow dreams are sent to us by some smarter person up there in my you know, unconscious, or, you know, in some other realm, you know, who's, you know, and we're failing to live up to their requests and failing to heed their warnings.
On a day-to-day basis.
That's not the way it works. And that's not the way it works.
Failing on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
We're going to take a short break here. When you come back, you know, we just talked about, for those of you just tuning in, you know, we've just talked about the many, many ways we either conceive, misconceive, interpret or misinterpret, do or not do with the dreams that we get. You might call them visions. You might call them dreams. Let's call them insights. We just talked about all the many ways we get so confused, so mixed up, so guilted, so shamed. When we come back, we're going to talk with Eric about what do we do? You know, what do I do with that dream thing that happened with the mama? What do I do with that? Is there anything for me to do? How do I not step into the rabbit hole and slide all the way down, making my own little story up about what Mama Doris was trying to say to me? Let's take a short break, everybody. When we come back, I have a copy of the book to give away, Benny. Much more with Eric. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia. And I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that a whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit BurnBrightToday.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding Into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com. Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hey everybody, welcome back. We're talking about precognitive dream work and the long self. Interpreting messages from your future with incredible author Eric Wargo, especially the author of Time Loops as well. And Eric, before we talk about, look, we just talked about all the things that we could literally drop in a basket and not have go so well with dreams. We're going to talk about what do we do with them. But before we do that, how do we find out about you? How do we get a copy of the book?
Right. The book is available from bookstores, and it is available from any online bookseller. And the title is Precognitive Dreamwork and the Long Self. I also have a blog, thenightshirt.com, all one word, The Nightshirt. And that's where I write about these topics and a lot of related concerns.
Yeah. And there's a lot of information in the blog, too. And so, you know, we have 1 hour to really condense a book that is so filled with information. And so I love when people can connect with you on a regular basis. Benny, let's give a copy of the book away if we could. 1-800-930-2819. Let's go ahead and do that. Eric, look, we've talked a little bit about sort of the ups and downs, especially in my field, psychology, and we talked about versions of what our pop culture would like us to believe about dream work or precognitive. Or now, let's talk about here we are, and I'm waking up today, and out, it's like my mind, my visualization has this precognitive dream. Most people don't know what to do the minute after that happens. And I think that's what you're doing here, is you're helping us with that next step. Sometimes you never have the dream again. Other times people will go to bed the next day and it will stay with them. This is where you come in. What have you learned? What can we help people with when they get a dream like that? Or maybe you're like me. Maybe you're sitting trying to eat a couple of eggs and all of a sudden you get something in your sight. Tell us, where do we go from that dream?
Yeah, well, first let me say that you never know a dream is precognitive until the event that it's precognizing happens. So you don't, when you wake up with a dream, you don't know necessarily what that dream is. Now, some people will have dreams that, oh, wow, that feels, you know, I'm sure something is going to happen. And they may be right. But one of the myths that I try to debunk in the book is the myth that precognitive dreams or premonitions or whatever always feel numinous, or they feel special somehow. And that is not the case. And this is why the number one step in precognitive dream work, it's very simple, and there's really three steps. But the first is write down all your dreams when you wake up, as much as you can remember. In fact, we dream throughout the night, and what we remember when we wake up is probably a small fraction of that. So, you know, most of it's gone. Don't worry about that.
Right.
But write down everything you can in detail, as much detail as you can, about every dream that you can remember, even if it's just a fragment of a dream or just an image or a setting or something like that. Write down what you can remember, because you don't know what's going to turn out to have precognitive significance later. The third step, we'll come back to the second step later, but the third step to precognitive dream work is then going back to your dream records at the end of every day. Now, this is the thing. A lot of people are interested in dreams. A lot of people write down their dreams. No one thinks to go back to those dream records after a short amount of time.
Right.
And this is what's going to, this is what will, you know, people, this is how you detect a precognitive dream, is you open your dream records at night. You know, forget about your dream during the day. You don't need to think about it during the day. But at night, open, before you go to bed or whatever, look at your dream record and just think about the events of that day and if anything kind of seems to connect to the events of the interim. And in fact, go back through your dream records from the last few days. I recommend 3. That's kind of an arbitrary number. You're most likely to detect a precognitive dream unfolding in the next few days after you dream. Like,
wow.
2 days seems to be kind of almost a sweet spot for me. But not necessarily. Some dreams, you know, target events farther out in the future. Some target events exactly a year or multiple years in the future. This is something called calendrical resonance that I talk about in the book. But by and large, if you want to make as much headway in a short amount of time as possible, getting some precognitive dream hits, go back to your dream records from the last 3 days at the end of every day. Just look at what you wrote down from your dreams and just reflect on them. You know, reflect on what happened in that interim and see what you find. Now, we can talk about the second step of free association later if you want, or we can talk about it now.
I want to talk about it now.
Okay.
Because one of the things you just, I want to keep this rolling because, one, first of all, it's insightful, but two, I like to make sure that, first of all, we have the best audience on the planet, and they're amazing. And what I have to make sure that I do is provide them with things they can use every day. And what you just shared is, I think, little known information about that. You know, we hear so often, oh, you're going to get one chance to remember your dream. Oh, you know, I mean, there's so many things we hear. But what you just described is pretty much what happens, you know, to me. That moment on the couch didn't mean that that was the first time I got that hit. You know, I think I was being reminded to remember it. But what to do with it is really so important now. I would like you to continue.
Well, let me say that those steps that I just gave you, steps one and step three for me, are not anything I came up with. This was the pioneer of precognitive dream work. He didn't call it that, but it's what it was an English aviator. I'm sorry, English aviation engineer, plane designer, back in the first decades of the 20th century, named J.W. Dunn, John William Dunn. And he was also a precognitive dreamer, and he was perplexed by these dreams he had that came true within, usually within a couple of days. And he wanted to understand them. And he brought his engineer's mind to being systematic about studying these things in his life. And what he hit on, which he invited his readers, he wrote a book in 1927 called An Experiment with Time. It was actually a big bestseller. It was very popular and influential for, you know, throughout the middle of the century. It influenced a lot of famous writers and stuff. He invited readers to do what I'm inviting readers to do, which is keep a dream journal and go back to your dream records after a couple of days. Now, and he fills the book with tons of examples of this. Of precognitive dreams that manifested in his life, and then he has a lot of theories about how it works. Now, he was writing at a time when the theories of Sigmund Freud were dominant in in culture. I mean, everyone was reading Freud. Everyone was interpreting their dreams according to Freudian free association and so forth. But he didn't occur to, and Dunn was well aware of Freud, and he didn't see any conflict between Freud's ideas and his, but he didn't put the two together. And basically what he was looking for in his dreams were obvious, very obvious, clear connections to an event in his future. So something, you know, like his famous example is he dreams he's on a volcanic island and it's about to blow. And he's trying to warn people. And then a certain number goes through his, you know, head in the dream. And then a few days later, he reads the newspaper about a major volcanic eruption in the Caribbean, that exact number or similar number of dead from the eruption. So things like that, obvious, you know, connections between the dream and the event. What I have found and other dream workers find is that most precognitive dreams are not literal representations of a future experience or a future event. They're distorted in various ways, and they have a lot of symbolism and a lot of substitutions and puns and things like that. And these are the kinds of things that really interested Freud. He didn't believe in precognition in dreams, but he did know and he did explain how to interpret them, you really need to free associate on them. And what that means, that it's not an esoteric exercise. All it means is saying, well, for this particular element in the dream, like this character in the dream or whatever, what's the first thing it reminds you of? What's the first thing that comes to mind? You know, don't put effort into it. Just, you know, what's the first thing that the first association that comes up, the first association or two associations that come up? Well, step two of precognitive dream work, as I'm formulating it, is when you write your dream down in the morning, sit within a minute and free associate on all of its elements and write down those associations next to the dream. So you have a dream about your stepmother.
Right.
Well, you probably have a million associations with her, but like what's, you know, you have a dream about a student, you know, in school that you haven't seen in, you know, 30 years or something like that. You know, what's your first association to that person?
Mm-hmm.
Or you have there's a certain object or a certain setting. You know, dreams are always take place in a certain setting. You know, what's your association to that setting? Write down those associations. Just what are the things that this reminds me of? And if it doesn't remind you of anything, don't force it.
Well, let me just comment on that for a minute, because let me tell you, this dream about my stepmom was very unusual. It was my stepmom almost in a Mortal Kombat sort of role, fending off multiple knives and blades, right? And when you were just talking about that now, and I go to my free association, my stepmom was a protector. You know, she was a fierce, whether it was injustice in the world, right, you could see her as a Mortal Kombat character, right? Or you could see her. What I didn't see her as was sort of a Kung Fu master person. So when you talk about interpretations or associations, it just clicked right now for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because no, I don't see my mom as like Mortal Kombat genius. But if I start to do it, I can come up with image of what that meant.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's often those associations that you're going to notice the connection to an event or an experience unfolding over the next, you know, few days or a couple weeks or whatever. So this is why this added step to what J.W. Dunn formulated 90 years ago or whatever that really takes it up a notch in terms of your ability to detect precognitive dreams and understand how precognitive dreams were working, how they're processing information that's refluxing from your future. You know, it's somehow that information is getting distorted, twisted, but there's always a rationale to it. So those are the three steps, and you know, you can start tomorrow. you know. And honestly, you know, you said that you're not someone who always remembers your dreams. In fact, just putting a notebook and a pen by the side of your bed will prime the pump. I mean, it really, people find that, you know, well, I never dream or I never remember my dreams. Just put a notebook there. It acts kind of like setting an intention, and you'll probably wake up with a nice dream. It's like, oh, okay. And so that's the perfect, you know, way to begin the wonderful life adventure of precognitive dream work, is just buy a nice notebook and pen and set it by your bedside.
I love this. I want to talk to you about something, and you allude to it in the book, and I can't remember where, but I grew up as a kid that I would go to bed at night. I'm just huge sci-fi kid from birth, I think. You know, just was fascinated by really interesting, strange, weird sci-fi things, right? Yeah. Movies all the time, whatever it was. But, you know, it was really interesting. I had a collective of all of these characters. It could have been Godzilla one day. It could have been the Colossus. It didn't matter. But one of the things I started to do as a kid is I started to create my dreams before I dreamt. Mm-hmm. And what I mean is, and, you know, and I thought about that. And as I was reading your book, I thought, well, did I really do that? Or did the dream come to me and I thought I was creating my dream? Can you see how the lines get blurred? And can you talk to how we sift through that, so to speak?
Yeah, the lines are very blurry. And there are a lot of kinds of dreaming. You know, I focused the book mostly, except for a couple chapters at the end. I really wanted to focus it on the kinds of dreams that most people are aware of having, you know, typical nocturnal dreams. But yeah, that edge of sleep phenomenon. First of all, what you're describing sounds a lot like what I did as a teen, which was kind of, well, I think, you know, in hindsight, you know, I hadn't read Jung, of course, as a teen, but I think in hindsight, I was engaged in active imagination. What a Jungian
exactly.
Would call active imagination. And that's, I think, what you're describing. And in fact, one of the super precognitive dream workers in my book, her name is Toby, she the amazing story and shared, you know, just incredible precognitive dreams with me. That's her main form of dreaming, actually, as she finds it much more interesting to engage with the dream world during waking. Now, it's not something that comes easily for a lot of people. It depends. Some people are just naturally slip into that trance like you're describing and can go to another place. And some people use it creatively and will get stories and things like that. Other people don't have such a facility with doing that, at least not as adults. I think it's something that we probably all are better able to do when we're kids. Or teens like me, and I kind of aged out of it, and I find it difficult to do as an adult. But it's definitely part of the spectrum of dream phenomena. And yes, if you can engage that kind of dream world in waking life, then all the same rules apply, and maybe even different rules. I don't know. It's not an area I've explored as much, but some precognitive dream workers who do that are exploring it right now. And so, you know, maybe we'll see. Maybe in years to come, we'll have more principles, you know, governing precognition and how it works in waking life. But not only that, there's also hypnagogic states and hypnopompic states of the edge of sleep. These are very rich. For precognitive exploration, they present certain challenges. It's very hard to rouse yourself from, especially hypnagogic image, as you're slipping into sleep, because it feels so good to be falling asleep that you just don't want to, get up and write it down. That's the last thing you want to do. But when you have the discipline to do that, boy, those images are very often will pay off within a couple of days. You know, this is what I saw point in that.
It's so funny you're talking about this. I know we only have a few minutes left, but I got to mention it. It's something to think about. I work with Mary Jane Mack, one of the hosts, and she suggested I get a device called BrainTap. Now, if you go look at it, it looks like you put a headphone on, but it is that, I don't want to call it total hypnotic state, but you are getting the subliminal message. It takes you to a place where you can calm and relax. Mm-hmm. But for somebody like me, What I've noticed with it, I do a couple of the brain tap, you know, exercises or these hypnotic things. Some of them are enchanted, but whatever they are. And I will tell you that what I've noticed about them, and you just helped me with this, is that I'm like coming out of it. I'm not sleeping. And I will get up and I will walk in. I did this a couple of weeks ago, and I walked into Linda and said, oh, my God, I got the best idea. And, you know, are these type of prone to have things activated by them? But the point is this. This information is available to us. And I think what you're helping us with is it's available to all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, maybe you're using a brain tap, maybe you're not. But isn't that really the key underpinning of what you're inviting people to explore, Eric?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'm talking about the spectrum of dreaming, honestly, I think, and this is where my research actually has taken me in more recent years since I wrote this book, I'm really more interested in creativity. And, in fact, I think creativity is precognition.
I think
our original ideas, ideas that come to us unbidden, often in a sort of trance-like state or edge of sleep or standing in the shower and some solution happens, that eureka moment, I think that is actually a form of precognition. And there's so many examples of this in the arts and in, writers and artists of all kinds, you know, having some kind of, you know, inspiration for a novel, which then, or a work of art that then unfolds in their life. It's so prevalent that I think that this is not just an aberration or a neat little nifty feature of creativity. I think it is what creativity is. And so that's what I'm working on now. And there's a bit on that on my blog on that. But it's an
exciting field.
Yes.
I want to just comment for a minute. I mean, this is really, okay, we overuse leading edge, but this is really important because we all talk about being a fast-paced world, not being able to keep up. And we leave out the fact that even though the world is fast-paced, we still have these abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are a population of people that think, I am on my phone, I'm testing, that's not for me. And I think that is a grave misunderstanding and injustice for people, right?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to hear about your work on creativity, and I hope you'll come back.
I'd love to.
I'm telling you. Sometimes you get ideas, and sometimes you know what to do with them, and sometimes you don't. And I think your book helps us be a safe place, a safe haven for people to say, I'm not crazy. I'm not insane about this. What's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with today?
Oh, my personal message is, you know, you, whoever you are out there in internet land or radio land. You are an amazing, amazing object in the universe. You are a four-dimensional, vast creature. And when you start exploring your dreams, you start to realize that, you know, your past, you may think it's dead and gone, and you may think the future has no relevance. No, it's all connected. It's all connected. Yeah.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
Five things you need to know about measles in 30 seconds. The vaccine was developed in 1963, and measles became rare in the U.S. But low vaccination rates are now causing outbreaks that may put you at risk. Measles is highly contagious and spreads easily when an infected person breathes or coughs. Measles can have serious complications and can be deadly. It's also easy to prevent with a vaccine that's safe and effective. Please make sure you and your loved ones are vaccinated. Learn more at nfib.org/measles.
And good Wednesday to you. Benny Mathers here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the sound. We're over on State Route 104 eastbound at First Avenue Northeast around Mile Post 29. A recent incident partially blocking most of the lanes in that area. The State Patrol has arrived on the scene and they are taking care of the blocking situation. Stay tuned for another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network coming up next after the news and weather and the good news segments of the week with Dr. Pat.
News Radio. I'm Tom Roberts. Federal agents are raiding the apartment of Donald Trump attorney Rudy Giuliani. New York Times reporter Michael Schmidt says this is a big deal.
Executing a search warrant is one of the most aggressive steps that prosecutors can take.
The New York Times reports a search warrant was issued in New York City as part of the probe into Giuliani's dealings in Ukraine while Trump was president. The paper says authorities have seized Giuliani's electronic devices. A judge in North Carolina is ruling that four videos linked to the police shooting death of Andrew Brown Jr. in Elizabeth City will not be released to the public for at least 30 to 45 days. However, NBC News reports they'll be disclosed to Brown's family, although the videos will not be complete. President Biden will speak to a joint session of Congress this evening. He'll urge passage of the American Jobs Plan and introduce more of the American Families Plan, two multi-trillion dollar packages meant to help the U.S. dig out of the hole caused by the coronavirus pandemic. Reporter Hallie Jackson says the address will be historic in another way.
There's also going to be some history in the making. Vice President Harris and Speaker Nancy Pelosi will be sitting behind the president, as is traditional for the people in those two roles. But this is the first time that that is featuring two women there.
Lawmakers are looking into the lingering effect of COVID on some people who have survived the virus.
People with long COVID report experiencing different combinations of symptoms, including fatigue, brain fog, and chronic pain.
California Democrat Anna Eshoo opened a virtual hearing and called them long-haul patients. She suggested the numbers could be vast. The astronaut who flew the Apollo 11 command module is dead at the age of 90. Michael Collins' family announced the retired Air Force Major General passed away following a fight with cancer. Collins performed multiple spacewalks while with NASA and orbited the moon 30 times while waiting for Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin to return from the lunar surface. You're listening to the latest from NBC News Radio.
Need a break from the sound bites and the talking heads? Do you want information you can actually use? Information that'll change your life for the better? Then listen to the Del Walmsley Radio Show. Del will show you how to retire in 2 to 5 years. Your age doesn't matter. Turn off the pundits and turn on the passive income. Tune in to the Del Walmsley Radio Show.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon, right here on KKNW.
And let's go ahead and take a look now for alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies today and a few sun breaks. High temperatures around 64, 65 degrees. Tonight, clouds will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down about 49, 50. For Thursday, mostly cloudy skies with a few sun breaks yet again. High temperatures around 71, 72. We will, however, though, see a chance of light showers moving in Thursday night to Friday. Low temperatures down to about 50. Clouds and rain expected for Friday. Highs around 51.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned, because you're just about to experience transformative.
Cast a lens on a new level of awareness and awakening. And then once I get that awareness and awakening, especially if it has to do with, let's just call it injustice, what do I do with that? Do I sit on it? You know, I have somebody here today, Kenneth James Moore, who is the author of Pieces of Wood. You're going to hear about Pieces of Wood. You're going to hear about what this is about, his passion, his purpose, his first novel. But it is story. It's a story of atrocities. And why now? Why is this time in our world the time to bring things forward? Well, I'm not going to answer that. I'm going to have my very special guest talk about that. Kenneth, it's great to have you. Welcome.
Thank you, Doctor. It's very kind of you to have me on your show.
I want to start with a question that's not so much about the book. sometimes we are made aware. We're made aware of a situation. We're made aware of an injustice. We're made aware. I don't really know have another word for it. But once we are made aware, there's a haunting, a commitment, a promise that hangs on to us. Pieces of Wood attained a number one best-selling status on Amazon. But I'm more interested in you and how this particular piece, this book, this information, this unveiling, this revelation, what is it that's happened to you on the inside to say, I've got to write about this?
Well, frankly, that's a fascinating question. I appreciate it very much. Essentially, I had made a promise to my mom when I was 8 years old that I would find what happened to her World War II brother, her youngest brother, with whom she was very close, who never came home from the war. So as I grew and mature and had the opportunities, I was an investment banker, so I had the resources to try and do whatever I could. I also had an excellent education, so in the process of doing research in the international community, I was a poli sci grad student at Georgetown, undergrad ASU, found that I had so many connections to my uncle that I had absolutely no awareness of on the surface. So I was pursuing my uncle to try to figure out what happened to him. I spent 27 years collecting data as an investment banker. I traveled all over the country and interviewed people for business purposes, but on a tangential basis, I would try to search and deal with and try to interview people that may have been in the Pacific, or more specifically in the Mariana Archipelago during World War II. So I had tons of data. I mean, I had a great assistant who took boxes of broad data and put it together for me in three-ring binders to help me actually convey these thoughts. But I happened upon a scenario where we, while looking for my uncle, and I was told that on a mountain on Saipan, Mount Tapachu, there was a B-29. My uncle was a pilot in a B-29. Although I knew from my research this could not have been him, nor his plane, but we thought that perhaps if we could research or see and identify a remnant of a B-29 on ground on terra firma, it would be a lot easier than doing it at 80 feet of water off of another island in the Mariana Archipelago. So we were exploring up there on Mount Tapachu and then came across what was a big hole, a cavernous area. And I thought, well, you know, it was shot down, okay. So I crawled into it. Well, it wasn't the inside of a B-29. It was a refractory oven, a human refractory oven, in essence, where women were barbecued, pardon the expression, in mass, and later defined a nearby plaque which identified 5,000 women were barbecued in this area where this refractory oven and other ovens that had been broken down over the years were located on top of the mountain in a very, very difficult area to reach. But it was hidden well away in 1944. And it, that opened up a door. It said, oh, my God, we're walking on a killing field, Imperial Japanese killing field. And there was all sorts of remnants of human remains, not only in the ovens, but as we walked.
Wow.
But, yeah, so it's, I also had, in 1981, I established a self-defense for women course at the University of Maryland. I was a martial arts expert, and I was very much taken by the fact that on TV commercials are saying, oh, hey, reach into your purse and get a weapon or get some mace. Well, excuse me, but as a close combat expert, that's just so ridiculous. I decided to actually do something about it and had the blessing of the YMCA in Maryland and taught again for a couple of years at the university for free. I guess it was just something that really disturbed me. But then life went on and I became an investment banker and did all sorts of other stuff. But then, tried to make that promise come to life for my mom. And so we're again up in Mount Apache, just going through the jungle, and here's this big orifice, and that wasn't a B-29.
Wow. I want to talk to you about this because, I've been asked a number of different times, and I want to get right to this question. I've been asked a number of different times, why do you do what you do, Pat, especially speak out against violence against women? Why do you speak out? Why have you, going back as young as you can go back, why has this been a thing for you? What did you see in your life? And today's conversation with you is not about me, but I want to really get to, I'm reading your book, and of course, the historical background in this is absolutely incredible, especially about the research. I think our listeners are curious about what you discovered, because my sense is what you discovered changed you, and it's also changing mm-hmm. readers. And so let's talk about what you discovered. And, there were some things that I bet you expected to discover, but I bet there were other things you were like, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Right?
That's very true. That's very true. Well, again, seeing a killing field like this on top of a mountain was, that was jaw-dropping. I was with some people who were very experienced South African Special Forces types, for example, and Marines, U.S. Marines, South Korean ROK Marines. But there was just two of us who came across this particular site. The other guys investigated it per my directive after the fact, but there was just two of us who came across the site initially. And, I think pieces of wood by novel that I was really trying to get to, it must be seen as a warning to current generations.
Yes.
There is no room under the rug for anything more to be swept.
Yes.
We've kept this remarkable number of people. Now, we're not just talking about 5,000 women in a refractory oven. We're talking about 18 to 20 million Chinese who were destroyed by the Japanese. And 2.2 million underage girls that are so labeled comfort women. Like, no comfort for those women, I can assure you. And that's just an abomination. I mean, no society can prolong itself and advance beyond its developmental years when one half of its population are subjugated and mean to view themselves as less than the other. And it just has got to stop. And it needs to be seen. So I think what Pieces of Wood does, it sweeps it out from underneath the carpet and you go, hey, look at this. This is as bad as it could possibly get. I mean, the abomination is just, it's so off the scope. And indeed, numbers, I get upset with always talking about numbers, but the reality is, people, when you hear numbers, you don't see the suffering, you don't see the pain, you don't the social upheaval that this kind of crap develops. The result of it is how many people's lives had to be wasted and how many people and what social benefits could there have been had some of these people lived?
Yeah, and let's talk about this because you've really hit something that I'm really focusing on right now. First of all, when you talk about numbers, this is what I've learned as a researcher as well. You're only talking about the tip of the iceberg because what you can find that's obvious to the person is really a tip of an iceberg. Usually when we're talking about atrocities like this, the bottom of the iceberg or that part of the iceberg that is still under the water it's under the water, but it can't be seen. And so we have to make a giant leap here to say what you discovered is a fraction of what may have happened. So let's just start with that. The second thing is, let's talk about the importance of this book and the journey you take us on, because this is multi-generationally affected. This affects somebody's psychological, so physical. I mean, this is something when, you know, a culture goes through this, or cultures go through experiences like this, you don't wake up one day and it's gone. You know what I mean, Kenneth?
Sure, absolutely. Yes, there's no question about it. Yeah, World War II ended in 1945.
Yeah.
You know, we still live in this past. And virtually everything that has come, both positive and negative, into our society today began in World War II, or an outcome of World War II. But it's so vastly disturbing. I was referring to numbers, but you know, I can throw up 18 to 20 million Chinese, 2.2 million underage girls who became quote-unquote comfort women.
Yeah.
I can keep throwing out those kinds of numbers. I've done all sorts of research. You're absolutely right. It's like that iceberg. You just see the tip of it. But when you start digging down below it, and I use the analogy of, you know, sweeping out from underneath the rug, still, it's horrific on an epic scale.
Yeah.
And my point is, this happened once. This wasn't in the 8th century in Europe. This wasn't in. This wasn't Genghis Khan in the Asian community in what was that, the 12th century. This was the 20th century. This happened just 70-some years ago, and it can happen again if it's not seen. It's not brought out and from underneath the rug or exposed more from that iceberg scenario.
And, you know, if I might say this, let me ask you this, because even though it doesn't exactly mimic what you have uncovered in the book, we are seeing atrocities of this nature everywhere. And you know what I mean by that is, if we don't continue to make all of us aware, I'm really struck by a couple of things as I was reading this. One of the things I was struck, you know, in, here in the United States, I don't care what your political party is, taking children, separating them from parents and locking them in cages, that doesn't sound, I mean, it doesn't matter what the country is. It doesn't matter what party you are. But just think about that. And I think that you are exposing something that becomes a baseline for us to say, we have to stop this, right, Ken? What would you love for people to do as a result of what you are revealing in the book?
They have to say, we have to be transparent moving forward. There's just no time, no place, no room, as I said once earlier, underneath that rug to keep putting crap under there. We have to say, this happened. This is what it was. This is the truth. And I think that's really what you referred to my journey. And by the way, it's Pieces of Wood is one of three in a trilogy.
Right.
You're gonna see more of what I uncovered in the next two books. But we have to stop pretending. We have to stop saying, oh, well, this wasn't as bad as it was. Hell yes, it was. And we need that.
Yeah, you know what? I was talking to a friend of mine, and they said, you keep talking about this guy, Viktor Frankl, and you keep talking about him on air and saying that how that book was given to you, Pat, and that book changed your life. And I said, yeah, I mean, read the book. It's a hard read. I don't suggest you do the audiobook version of it unless you can take it. And, you know, then the comment was, this couldn't have happened. It couldn't have been like this during World War II.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, what do you mean it couldn't? Yes, just like your book. Yes, it did. This did happen, and it will happen again if we're not made aware, right, Ken?
Exactly that. That is the message behind Pieces of Wood. If you're not made aware of it, it can and will happen again.
Mm.
And from the fictional standpoint of my novel, that's what chapter one is about. It's like oh, hey, here's this woman, this Christian zealot, and oh, she's doing these things, and all of a sudden she's shot by a sheriff.
Yes.
Like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
Rather than being captured and brought before a court of law, she was executed on the beach. Well, you know.
It's real.
That's just it's a step one in the process, you know. If the idea that, violence against women occurs in one family, one episode, well, that's okay because it's going to go, it was just one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It's going to escalate from there, and it always has. And here's an example of just how well it escalated where millions of people are killed.
You know, you and I, probably if we had more time, we could really talk this up, and we'll have to think about it. One of the things that I latched onto, Kenneth, and I'm just going to say this, is I started to look at the statistics in the United States, state by state, and look at the statistics of women murdered by men in the United States. Just that number. I mean, there's a lot of other numbers, but I wanted to focus on that. I wanted to know, are women here being killed? Are they being shot? Are they being... The numbers, the statistics, and the states where women are being murdered by men in the United States of America, it's shocking. I sent an email to one of the senators in South Carolina, and I said, my gosh, dude, this is your 21st year in a row that your state has made it in the top 10, and that's not a good thing. So I'm trying to figure out, like you, maybe, I'm not a writer, so writing a novel just wouldn't work for me, but maybe you carry the burden for us. Maybe you point out the atrocities. You know, maybe there is something here we could all be aware of. At least right now for me, I'm watching, you know, my friends, people in the Asian community being mugged on the street, and they've done nothing.
Yes, exactly.
I want to ask you one last question. How do we find out? How do we get a copy of the book? And I'd love to know your personal message, Kenneth.
Well, that personal message, I'll address that question first, is simply, again, we have to move forward in a transparent fashion. We have to stop pretending things didn't happen because, in fact, they did. And they will happen again if it is not seen, if there is not put on display and fingers are pointed at it. It will happen again. And that's just, as you just indicated, the number of women killed in the United States alone. It's outrageous. So...
Yeah.
In terms of where you can get the book, how about www.piecesofwood.net?
Boy, I can't thank you enough, Kenneth, for, first of all, writing this, secondly, for making it a trilogy. And the last part I want to say to you is I hear your passion. I can hear it through your voice. I hear that you are keeping a promise. Now, I studied the consequences of broken promises for 10 years, so I will tell you that keeping a promise about this is critically important. Thank you so much for all that you're doing.
Thank you, Doctor. It's a sincere pleasure. I think I need another cup of coffee now.
Yeah, and I want to tell everybody, this is a really short interview. Please go check out the book yourselves. You'll see why it is a bestseller. When you sit down to read this book, I will guarantee you, you will be right there. You will be in the environment. You'll be in the conversations. You'll hear Frank say, you were lucky. So was Preston. And you'll know what that means. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back. Have you ever felt like if you just had the right tools and resources, you'd be able to carve a path for the life your heart is aching for? Guess what? You have everything you need inside you. I'm Natasha Ognedo, and I'm here to show you that your healing is in your hands. Tune into my show, Unlock the Healing Path, every second and fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about me and my work, visit NatashaOgnedo.com.
We figured by the time we turned 50, we kind of had life figured out. But we were not prepared for the realities of midlife. Tune into And That's When I Realized, the truth and comedy of midlife, with me, Susan Dolce.
And me, Leon Dyer, every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. You're not alone in these challenges, and sometimes you just gotta laugh.
Find us at SusanDolce.com
and LeonDyer.com.
The Truth is Funny, Shift Happens, with monthly guest host Karen Benton. Tune in for powerful conversations about health and wellness. Karen brings unique insights rich with humor and science to her discussions with experts in medicine, movement, psychology, spirituality, and so much more. Don't miss Karen on The Truth is Funny every third Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to our really, really, really good news segment. Look, are you thinking about how do I plan? How do I get to this stress-free zone? How maybe should I plan for that dream vacation again? Can it be relaxing? Can it be safe? Can it be all of the above? And what? Financially rewarding. Yeah. Gabriel Flowers Rader joining me here today. Excuse me. Along with John Sellers, Bank of America rewards expert, we are going to really take this down to the bare bones so that you understand how you can get out there, have fun, and earn at the same time. This is the time. We've been indoors a lot, and we're busting out. That's like a Diana Ross song. Hey, welcome to both of you. Welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I want to go, I'm coming out. That's what I want to be doing right now with that song right there, just saying. Because I think we feel like that, right? Gabriel, don't we feel like that a little bit? Like, oh my gosh, right?
Absolutely. You know, like, who doesn't deserve a stress-free vacation right now? I think we all do. And I think that the key to having that is to plan it ahead of time. So it seems obvious, but, of course, you want to make sure you have the schedule and the budget prepared so once you get there, you can actually relax. So, you know, a few things that I like to do is first plan out the itinerary. I sit down with my husband. You know, we think about what are some things we want to do once we get there? What are some fun activities for the kids? Where do we want to eat? And then we kind of build like a loose agenda, but we spread out the activities because, of course, you don't want to throw it all in the front or cram it all in before you leave. You also want to have that downtime and time to relax. And then if you have free time, you have an area of spontaneity as well. Say you get there and you find out about some new attraction that you didn't know about, you'll have a place to stick it in on the agenda. And then, of course, you know, the most important thing is to plan for it financially. So we have a dedicated travel fund, which is a savings account that can take care of all the costs incurred.
Yeah. Listen, let me tell you about Gabriel a minute. Here's what I love about having somebody like Gabriel on the show today and tag-teaming it with John. You know, when I think about this mother of two, a lifestyle influencer, much more than that, somebody that is really at the heart, at the pulse of what people are feeling. And then what does Gabriel do? What she does is she connects with hundreds of thousands of people out there to help them jump up, step up, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're somebody that is just saying, I need a blessing of the stressing right now. That's what this is all about. Give me the blessing of the stressing right now. Whether it's fitness, whether it's getting out, whether it's staying in, that's why she's here today. Gabriel, thank you. And John, let's tag team this for a minute because here you are. You're saying, now, wait a minute. We can do all that. And how about earning a few bucks, right?
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's important to have that travel budget and to do it ahead of time, right? Be specific about the dollar amount that you're willing to spend based on your destination. And if you map out all these purchases in advance, you can create a plan to maximize your rewards. And savvy travelers know the key to saving money is layering all their reward options. And our research at Bank of America tells us most Americans aren't doing this. In fact, 62%. Are not doing it. So here's what you need to do, right? So think about all those travel providers you're going to engage with. the airlines, the hotels, the car rental companies, et cetera. They all have loyalty programs. They're generally free to join. They're going to give you 1% back, if not more. You should take advantage of that. Next, have a rewards credit card. This is really core to the strategy. Bank of America offers a cash rewards card that gives you 3% cash back on your choice of 6 different categories, including travel. And then think about a banking loyalty program, because at Bank of America, we have something called Preferred Rewards. And that gives our members a suite of benefits across their entire banking and relation and investing relationship. But in particular with credit card, it gives you up to 75% bonus. So what that means, Dr. Pat, is that 3% on travel can turn to 5.25% back on travel, right? So when I'm traveling or I'm making travel transactions, I'm generally earning rewards at least 3 different ways.
Right.
So through the hotel, whether it's Marriott, through my cash rewards card, and then I'm getting a bonus on that because I'm a Preferred Rewards member. And if our members can emulate that, right, they can save a lot of money and have a lot more flexibility.
Yeah, I like to think about this in real practical ways, right? I'm a kid from the projects in the Bronx, so let me just break it down. You're on vacation, and there are 5 of you in a family, and you're going out to dinner, and you pull out that card, and you use that card, and what you find out with the number you just gave to us, holy cow, I'm now getting maybe one of these dinners for free with that little bonus. So that's the way I like to think about it. It's like you're not just maximizing what you get back. You're optimizing and reducing your cost mm-hmm. by getting the reward. See, I'm all about cost avoidance, just saying, Gabriel. Let's just talk about this because I'm so glad you gave those numbers. I really am. John, thank you so much for that. Okay, now we got the numbers, Gabriel. Help me spend it.
Well, you know, while you're building that itinerary, think of everybody that's going on the trip. Like, involve everybody, get everyone's opinion, and choose the destination as a family. So you want to make sure that nobody is bored on the trip, that there's something for everybody, whether it's a tropical getaway or a camping trip. You want to make sure everyone's happy, right? So the more people that can be involved with the planning, the better. Create a bucket list. We've all been stuck at home. What are some things that we haven't been able to do and we know we want to get done once we get there? So when you have that list, you can easily kind of go through it and think about all the other options, the meal options. Is it something for the picky eaters? Is there something for, you know, the fancy dinners for adults? Like, there's so many options, but the more people who have their hands in it, I think the better.
I don't know. One of my friends, I think it was reading one of your posts or maybe one of your podcasts. I can't remember now. But one of the things I loved about this is now you're bringing this message forward. Here's the way it turns into reality. And please, Gabriel, John, comment on this. So here we are. We're sitting indoors. And you know at some point you could see now the light at the end of the tunnel, right? Would you both agree that we're seeing mm-hmm. kind of the light there, right, at
yeah.
the end of the tunnel?
Absolutely.
So you sit down with your family. You know you haven't taken a vacation. You know you haven't spent that money on a vacation, and you're sitting down and you're getting everybody involved and you're saying, okay, this is a vacation that didn't happen. Let's sit down and plan it. Where would you want to go? And you actually have a strategy and you learn some negotiating skills so that when the time is right, you put a few bucks in your pocket and you now have a vacation, hopefully, that will make everybody happy. I want to ask you this question. Now that I've done that, what should people really put at the top of their list? I'm ready to go now. I'm going to get out in the world, even if it's going out camping or it doesn't matter. What should we do to make sure that when I'm out there, I'm having fun, I'm spending smart, and everybody's having fun and happy? John, why don't you start first? Because you're going to talk about some money, and then Gabriel's going to talk about the fun parts, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, you mentioned it. You know, people tell us, you know, they want to be able to track their finances while they're on vacation, especially their spending, right? And what's really key there, Dr. Pat, is to make sure you have mobile access, right? Make sure all the listeners out there should make sure they have access to their bank's mobile app before you go out on vacation. There's so much you can do with your phone, and from a banking perspective, it's really unbelievable. Bank of America has an industry-leading mobile app. It gives you access anywhere, anytime. Yeah. And it has some really, really cool features for travelers. I'll just name a few here. One is spending alerts, right, on your credit cards or debit card products. You can put a spending alert on balances or transactions that have come to your mobile and tell you when you've hit those. My Rewards is a destination point for all things rewards. You can see what you've earned. You can see what's available to take advantage of. There's a geo indicator there where we'll tell you offers and deals that are near you. And we even have Erica, which is our new award-winning AI-driven virtual assistant. So if you're on that trip to Orlando and it's a seven-day trip and you're at day five and you're worried how much you're spending you've done, you can just go to Erica and ask them for your transactions over the last 5 days, and voila, it's right there. So
I have no idea.
On the go.
I had no idea about Erica,
yeah.
and I'm embarrassed because why? I should know about Erica for my own personal reasons, so I'm going to be all over that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also have to step back a little bit with Gabriel and just get the Gabe fix here because been sitting around a little too much, not moving that body. Not getting anything going on here. We got to get it going on because I'm not going on vacation, Gabriel, and just being like, okay, I got to do something about this. Look, all kidding aside, we really do want to get back into the fun zone. We really do. But we don't have to get back in the fun zone to start being in the fun zone now. Talk to us about, look, what you've heard, what you're doing to help people step into the stress-free zone now. What is it? Of course, people can follow you. They can watch what you're saying. But I want to know your secret because you have tapped into an amazing array of ways to help people rise up.
Well, thank you for that. You know, I think that if we can all just take advantage of the time we have now and maximize the time we have now, we would all be in a good place wherever that is. Maybe you're not able to take the trip right now, but you can go somewhere, you know, local. You can have a staycation somewhere. You can get out and enjoy the weather. Thankfully, it's, you know, getting better now, so you can go out there. You can move your body. Like, that's a lot of things that I teach women in the Gabe Fix is how to take care of their body so they can be prepared and be there for their family and have the fun that we all deserve to have.
Yeah. I want to, before we jump ahead, I'm going to ask you for your last thoughts, but I want folks to know how they can find out more about what we're talking about today, how they can find out more about each of you. John, you want to go first?
Sure. bankofamerica.com/preferred rewards, or just go to bankofamerica.com, and in the search bar, you can type in cash rewards, preferred rewards, life plan, anything we've talked about.
Awesome. Gabriel, how about you?
You can check me out at Gabe Babe TV. You can search that on Google or on YouTube, and it'll all pop up, and you can keep up with me and my family.
And I just want to clarify for those of you that are starting to ping me right now, I just want to say to all of you, no, I didn't make that up. That was real, what I said. The Gabe Fix was real. That wasn't just like a thing I said. That was real. And you can go find out. For each of you, this is my last question for each of you. You've learned a lot during this time, or you wouldn't be here with us. You've learned a lot. I want to start out with you, Gabriel, if I can. In what you've learned over this time, what are your top two aha moments for people? And, John, you get to think about it longer, but, Gabriel, go ahead.
Really good questions. I think over this last year, if anything, it's just taught me that time is precious.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know how much of it you have. You don't know when something can change within a blink of an eye. So I think if we would live as authentic as possible and make the best of every single day, love on your family, love on your friends. Like, you know, don't take things for granted. I think those are the biggest things that I've learned over this past year.
So important, isn't it? Wow, so important.
Mm-hmm.
John, for you, and please mention Erica again.
Well, for me, it's, you know, definitely living with all my family here, you know, in a confined environment has had its stresses, but it's also had a ton of pros. So just getting to know each other at a deeper level, I think, has been a big aha. And then just general flexibility, right? Before, we all said, you know, you had to go here and work or you had to do this. But now we realize there's so many more flexible ways to accomplish, whether it's work or play or all these kind of things. You know, it's you know, you can be more creative in the future.
And can I just comment, and I don't usually do this, but I do want to comment on each of you. First of all, I want to thank you all at Bank of America for really making some changes and really up-leveling what you all have done for those of us that really haven't been able to drive to the bank and go to the window, you know, providing a portal for businesses like mine where you can pay people online and do so many things. I mean, that's another show that I will do to talk about how my business got saved because of so many of those things. And Gabriel, for you, look, I wasn't kidding about the many ways you're reaching out to people, but you're reaching out in a real way. You know, you are, I think, touching the hearts of so many people, and I got to say, I'm all over some of the recipes you got on that website. Ooh, my goodness, that white bean chicken chili, it is to die for.
It's so good, right?
Oh, my gosh, it is. I'm just like, she's giving away the store here by telling everybody. I want to thank you both, and I want to bless you both for doing what you're doing and helping so many people rise up again and live a perfect life, the life they desire. Thank you both for today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dr. Pence.
And so this is just a snippet. Please, everybody, go to the websites, check it out. There's much more, and I'm all over it. Plan. It doesn't have to be a gigantic vacation. Plan outings. Plan it. Get people involved and get some money back. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back.
The Dr. Pat Show.
This is it. The energy of heart to heart, mind to mind, love to love. These are the questions that people have and rarely state. When we have an internal transformation and we see things differently, what does it mean to step into the full nature of being a spiritual being? This is it. Every day, you have to do something outrageously positive. It is so absolutely relevant because what I've seen in humanity, despite what's in the headlines, I'm so struck by the heroes that have come forward. I'm just absolutely in awe. The idea generators and superheroes. All of you, you are the best listening audience in the world, and we are bringing it in 2021.
When was the last time you had that feeling that you knew something, but you couldn't explain how you knew it? How powerful would it be for your life and business if you could consciously tap into that magic within you? What if you could remember that there's something supernatural about you? Tune in to Absolute Alignment with Christelle Biga, When Success Feels Easy, every first and third Friday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to our good news segment. You know, I've been waiting for a conversation like the one we're going to have right now. Let me tell you why. I'm a kid, and I do believe the only reason I did not get into serious amount of trouble, end up in jail, or doing some crazy stuff was because of the activities that were outside of the classroom. I'm talking about music. I'm talking about art. I'm talking about how to be creative. And I thought, wow, we had lost this. But I have hope now, thanks to Candy Wilder and Ava Betancourt. Today, joining me here today, why? Because they didn't lose hope. They didn't lose a vision. They didn't give up their creativity in the middle of a pandemic. They just didn't do it. So how the performance of a lifetime took place, how did that happen for one middle school drama club? How did they do that? And how did they get creative bringing what I said a bunch of years ago to modern day technology? I got to say, hooray for them. Candy, Ava, great to have you here.
Thank you for having us. Yes, thank you, Dr. Pat.
Look, I'm not kidding. If it wasn't for the involvement back in the day of arts and creativity, I honestly know I wouldn't be on this planet. Candy, let me start with you. You are on the front lines. That's where you are. You're a drama teacher. Your students love you. COVID-19 comes, and here you go. I want to know what was going on in your mind and what was going on in your heart.
You know, so it started
last March, we had we were right in the middle of our big school performance. We were about to go on stage. We had our costumes, we had our sets, we were ready to go, and the school informed us that on a Friday that we probably weren't coming back on Monday, and we didn't. We didn't come back the rest of the year, and then we were told that we would be, distance learning all through next year. So I think at that point my brain was just kind of scrambling, going, oh, no, we're a performing arts department. We do theater. We do live performances, and now my students aren't going to have those opportunities. And so, I mean, if I'm being completely honest, I was pretty heartbroken at the time, and seeing my students, isolated, and seeing them, getting lonely, and they were starting to withdraw a little bit. You started to see a little bit of that light leave their eyes, and, the excitement start to dwindle.
Yeah, that has got to be the worst feeling in the world for a teacher. I mean, it's one of those things where you have made a commitment to yourself and to the lives of others to bring to them a vision, an education, and a future. Ava, let me ask you the same question, because I think that we're talking about both. We're talking about, what is it like to be in a driver's seat? What is it like to be the car? And so what was in your heart and mind?
Well, when everything was shut down, it was really sad because I was so excited to be in the musical. And I don't want to say that I lost the passion, but I definitely wasn't as driven because we had lost almost everything that we were doing. So I was really upset, and like Ms. Wanda said, I was really heartbroken about it. And my brain just couldn't believe it. I was just, there was no way they could close the entire school district, but they did, and it was for a good reason, I guess, but we still lost a lot, so.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times, I'm like you both. I am, of course, the host of the Dr. Pat Show, but I'm the owner of the Transformation Network. You know, this is a network bound to launch 10 channels in the next 12 months. And that's why I ask you that question, because I know what was in my mind and what was in my heart. But here's the most important thing for all of us. You didn't give up. You didn't stop. You didn't, what is it? The agony of defeat. And Candy, I want to get back to you, because once you get to that heartbreak and you look at what is at stake, what then kicks in for somebody like you that says, I got to do something here?
I think mostly for me, I needed my students to continue that creative outlet. My heart lies in theater. I love theater, and I know that my students are the future of theater. And what's at stake for us if these extracurriculars activities go away is we lose our future.
Yeah.
We lose that creative spark that's going to drive us forward.
Let's talk about the end game. Let's talk about what happens when you bring together creative people. Let's talk about what we are really talking about today, is putting this creativity to drawn closer. Ava, tell us about it. Tell us about that, and tell us about your character.
Well, Drawn Closer is the story about a middle school's opening night of their play, and everything's going wrong, and the star of the show is at home with a broken leg, and so everyone's really working together to find creative ways to include the star in the play, even though she's not with them, which is basically what happened with us, because we weren't together, but we got to put on a performance even though we were apart. And my character is the director, so the director is persevering, problem-solving, trying to keep everyone positive and sane.
I got to ask you, what did you learn from that role in what you're going to enact in your life?
I don't know. I think that I learned that I really enjoy what I'm doing, and that I think that I can be kind of a good leader, and that, working with the people who share your passion really helps you to realize what you enjoy.
Look, Candy, I want to ask you this question too, because 10 years ago when we were building the network, we put a lot of emphasis in technology. We had no idea where we would be today with technology, but it was really important to really build an infrastructure of a network that was going to have technology that could distribute positive talk to hundreds of networks.
we now know how important that decision was. How important was it, and what was your experience of working with Patrick Osborne, and working with / creativity and technology?
You know, it wasn't something, I've been a drama teacher now for 11 years, and it was nothing like I ever imagined. I never saw myself helping my students get into voice acting as much, because everything we did was live and on stage. You know, the technology we were utilizing was, you know, projection design in the back. But when Cox Communications asked us if we would be wanting to do a animated production, I just was floored. I was so excited. I can't even tell you what it was like to see them work in this new creative way. Patrick Osborne was a surprise for us. We didn't know that we were going to be working with this, Academy Award-winning director. I was a big fan of his before, and when we first went to that first rehearsal, they were like, here's Patrick Osborne. I was like, oh my goodness, this is the guy who created Beats. This is like a huge experience for my students. So it went from exciting to just completely mind-blowing.
I could see you smiling even though I can't see you smiling. That's what I love about doing these. That's what I love about these conversations. You know, it's so important. We're really carving out a future. We're carving out a new way. You see, we may be talking about one thing here, but it's not one thing. It is a discovery. It's an innovation. It's going to transform the lives of how many schools around the world. Ava, I want to ask you this question because, you know, I am a kid that grew up stuttering. And, you know, if you wanted to see the most scary appearance on stage was me in the play Oklahoma as a kid that stuttered. The good news is I had a great director, a great teacher that coached me through it. I sit here today being able to speak almost without. I want to ask you this. This experience changed the trajectory of your life, I do believe. How do you see your life now differently as a result of this experience, or maybe not?
I do see my life differently now, because when everything shut down, I didn't see anything like this ever happening. So now I'm really invested in what I'm doing, and I can finally say that I'm so excited that this is getting back to normal. Mm. And, you know, it changed my life, yeah.
Mm. I gotta stay with you for a minute, Ava. I love being able to help other people like me that didn't get a shot at being out in the world with their message. What are your thoughts about doing interviews like this, spreading the word, and helping others do the same?
I really do enjoy it, because spreading the word means that you can tell people that there are ways to be together even when you're apart. And something that Ms. Wilder says all the time is that you can find ways to be creative even in a pandemic. So it's really important to share that there are ways you can find to be together and be creative.
Yeah. Well, I love this. I know we have a few minutes left, but before we do, Candy, I want to make sure people know how they find out more about Drawn Closer, how they can watch, how they can tap in. Well, let's get folks a lot of information. Can you do that, Candy, if you don't mind?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's very easy to find out more information about this project. It's just cox.com/drawncloser.
All right, Candy, this is for you. 11 years. Teaching drama, right?
That's
here,
right.
You are. You get a transformative experience in your expertise, right? Same question.
Right.
How is this going to change the way you go about things moving forward?
You know, now I know that the sky's the limit. There's nothing that can hold us back. At first, when the pandemic hit, I was very nervous about how we were going to continue with the arts. And now, you know, it doesn't seem like those boundaries are quite so confining anymore. It seems that there are ways that we can expand, and there are ways that we can grow, and theater's going to grow with it. And that's a really exciting platform for me, because, you know, you hear talk about people saying we need to get rid of the arts and schools and things like that. And
And now this has just given us a way to say, hey, no, we're growing, we're evolving, we're changing with the times, and students need these extracurriculars.
I got to tell you, every time I hear a conversation or a news headline about getting rid of the arts, I mean, I'm a kid from the Bronx that somehow got to play the viola and ended up in an orchestra, most unlikely to do that. And I want to ask you this question, and this is for both of you, really. I know we only have a few minutes left. You know, I want to talk about the notion of expression and connection in middle school students. I want to talk about this because if we've learned one thing from the pandemic, we've learned that that expression and connection is more important than we ever imagined. When you hear that, Candy, what do you think about doing, changing? What do you think about getting fired up about?
You know, I think that that is a really great point, Dr. Pat, because this whole idea that we are connected, that we're connected through creativity, and it's not necessarily all in academics, I think that really drives me forward as a teacher, because I know now my passion is something that is needed. It's something that I can keep encouraging my students, and it's not just one of those things that the kids do off to the side. You know, they're not just doing those plays, but that they are being able to express themselves creatively, that they are able to make those connections and live other lives through the stage. And I find that that has really inspired me to become a better teacher even.
Ava, I got to ask you the same question because you are the future, right? And you just now got to experience this, almost two sides of the same coin. You know, the loss of expression, the loss of connection. So we had that experience. But then get over and step out and be part of something that probably is saving the lives and fueling the hope of so many children, so many kids. And I want to ask you, what gets you fired up about looking at your future and continuing to make sure that we have these opportunities?
What fires me up is that I know that now there are ways to be creative. So I know that I can continue to do what I'm doing, even if something tries to stop me. It makes me so excited that I can I know that I can continue doing this because of what we've experienced now.
Wow. I got to thank you both. I know you've got to run. I've got a million other questions, but I don't want to take up any more of your time. Again, Candy, let people know how they can find out more about this. And also, Candy, what's your personal message? Ava just gave hers. What's yours?
My personal message is just keep doing what you're doing. Share your talents. Keep theater alive. Keep art alive in schools because our students are our future, and I just want to say that, you know, creativity thrives even in a pandemic.
And they can watch Drawn Closer, correct?
Yes. You watch Drawn Closer by going to cox.com/drawnclosar.
And please go out there and Google this, everybody. You'll get a chance to meet Ava, a chance to meet Candy, and a chance